Welcome to What's in the Box, the show about Jackie Chan still going strong, secret showings of Blade Runner, and and this is nothing else.
Give me another one, but with less grimacing. No, because I'm going to cut. I need a good and nothing else.
Okay. Welcome to What's in the Box, the show about Jackie Chan still going strong, secret showings of Blade Runner, and nothing else.
This week, we will definitely not be talking about Marvel at any point because we've seen Infinity War. It's done now. We don't have to think about Marvel for ages. There are other films out there that besides Marvel. Thank you for those of you that got in touch on Twitter and been sending suggestions for what you'd like to see in the show. We'll definitely be getting on those soon.
What were some of the examples, mate?
Soundtracks. I thought soundtracks is a really good one. That's
like
definitely coming up. There's this one dude as well who keeps saying, like, will we review The Rock? Yes,
I've never heard of it.
At some point,
what is it? The Rock.
The Rock.
That documentary.
Yeah,
it sounds awful, mate. I'm not touching that.
It's where they rip off the fin of a shark and it swims around in a circle around the outside of that prison thing on an island.
What's that? What are you referencing there?
Shutter Shark Island.
And also, Martin on Twitter got in touch and suggested, mate. You know how there's a new Indiana Jones film coming out next year? Is it next year? It's probably next year. Top five picks for a Harrison Ford replacement. That's a fucking great shout. So any more suggestions like that, we'll probably pick them up and do them in a future episode. Keep them coming, Twitter.
I know what I wanted to talk to you about.
What? Hit me
I wanted
in
to
the
tell
face
you, I wanted
with
to,
whatever it is that you have.
I want to tell you about Jackie Chan's The Foreigner on Netflix.
Oh, here we go.
Because it looks awful. It looks absolutely diabolical.
Why?
If you look at it, it just looks like really crap action with an aging Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan.
Bronom? Pierce Brosnan?
He has got a Schwarzenegger thing going, hasn't he?
Yeah, cool, yeah, mate, it's him and Schwarzenegger with the two kind of like weird...
When he's hanging off that thing in GoldenEye.
Yeah, or he's got that sort of like clamp around him. He's like... No, I went into Arnie then. Arnie is... from Total Recall. It's fucking Brosnan is more like... No, that's Arnie again. So Jackie Chan
and Pierce Brosnan. Anyway, it looks awful. It's Jackie Chan in London,
right?
And
you've got my attention.
Taking his daughter to a dress shop, and the dress shop explodes, and it's a Splinter Cell faction of the IRA. Yeah, it's honestly, it's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. Yeah. It's one of the best films I've seen in ages.
Fuck off, is it?
Honestly.
Are you serious?
It's
what? Split reverse it like that.
So good. Because there's nothing I could tell you that would make you want to watch this film because it sounds retarded.
Okay, hit me up with a synopsis, mate. You know I love that shit.
Well, it turns out that Jackie Chan, although he just works in the Takeaway, knows the Takeaway is like ex-special forces working for the Americans during Vietnam. So uses his special forces training to go after the people that blew up his daughter.
Wait, so who's Pierce Brosnan play? The
Pierce
IRA
Brosnan
bad guy?
Pierce Brosnan plays a kind of Sinn Féin.
What, like a politician?
No, he plays a politician Every time I say his name, you have to do at least one grimace. So Brosnan plays a former... Yeah, so Brosnan plays a politician who like was formerly part of the IRA and has then moved, like, segued into politics.
Yeah, right.
And Jackie Chan's daughter isn't targeted. Jackie Chan's not targeted. Some people are trying to blow up a bank,
right.
And the bank is next to the dress shop that his daughter's in, so she gets killed as collateral. But what's brilliant is it's Jackie Chan starting to play his age, but it's a more mature role for Jackie Chan.
So less effort.
Yeah,
it means less effort. But wait a minute. What normally happens in these situations is he has like a younger nephew played by like someone who is Jackie Chan's age when he was fit that comes into it so he can do all the stunts still. Who's that?
That happens on the reverse side. So Brosnan has A young nephew.
What?
Yeah, Brosnan has a young nephew who's part of the Royal Irish Rangers, right, who comes back on leave.
Is Brosnan the bad guy?
Brosnan's... You don't know for quite a long time. Like, he hasn't ordered it. He goes to quite great lengths to find out who it is that's trying to start up trouble again.
His nephew's a bad guy?
No, his nephew's just trying to protect him from Jackie Chan.
What, protect Brosnan from... So, who's the bad guy? Who's the fucking bad guy then?
Well, I can't, don't want to give it away. You have to watch the... I can't spoiler it.
You want me to watch it?
Yeah, I actually want you to watch it because you'd be surprised. And it's the best performance Brosnan's given in years.
Fuck off, mate.
I'm serious. I'm deadly serious. All mission I kept saying the whole time we were watching the film was, can you believe this is good?
And we're like, Brosnan's good.
Yeah, like, Brosnan's good again. What the fuck is going on?
He's good again.
It's solid. It doesn't play like the average kind of B-movie action. You know that kind of level of action that's just...
I know exactly what level of action you mean, mate. You mean Whatever Rising.
Whatever Rising.
Olympus Has Fallen.
Oh, anything.
Valhalla Rising. Is that a film? Deep Blue Rising.
Yeah, basically.
Independence Rising. I'm Rising.
But think it's about got, Independence but Day. If you remove the action, you'd have quite a serious political thriller.
Fucking hell,
mate. It's bizarre.
I can't wait to
honestly
see that.
It's
shut
it's
up.
Bizarre. It's not. It's absolutely fucking bizarre. Which is why I'm telling you that you have to watch it.
You have a soft spot for Jackie Chan. Why can't you remember your own past?
No.
You showed me. I remember going around your gaff, and you, like, years and years ago when we were kids, and you showed me like Jackie Chan films. And I was like loving the credits and watching him like...
Oh, because
you know,
he was singing and doing all his stunts and stuff like that.
What did he say? He's like karaoke over his own...
No, he's singing his own, like singing his own songs.
What an entertainer. Yeah, and him like breaking his leg, jumping onto that hovercraft and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's much later on. That's in that film that...
That's in Police Attack 4.
No, that's in Rumble in the Bronx.
Mate, I've got a soft spot for Jackie Chan, even if you don't.
I really do. I think it's... Like, when he moved over to America, like, I think it was a necessary thing for him to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that comes a whole manner of different things, a different style of filmmaking, can't do your own stunts as much.
Because of insurance LA, yeah.
And stuff like that, yeah. There's really interesting story that he tells about like the fundamental differences between shooting in the States and shooting in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Which is like, say you're doing a shot over a building. Yeah. Yeah, looking down. So in America, you go to the top of the building, you set up a crane, you have to do risk assessments, you know, health and safety, you get the stunt people there, you get the technicians there, you get the engineers there. It takes 5 days, shots 15 seconds. In China, you put a belt around a dude, just lean him over the edge, that's it, job done.
With a little rope. Like,
yeah, that's it.
He goes, hold tight. Fucking hell, really? Seriously?
Yes, no, seriously.
Was this like in the 80s or something? Is this like...
When he told the story, it was mid-90s.
Good point on something, because that reminded me of The Cruiser fucking up his ankle on the latest Mission Impossible film. They left the footage in. He's clowning around in London, jumping over big gaps, and he jumps over like a gap and he lands, his foot lands and his ankle breaks, and then he climbs up and runs on it. He steps on it 3 times or whatever on a broken ankle.
Are you referring to Tom Cruise as The Cruiser?
Yes, The Cruiser, mate. Well, what do you call him?
Well, I'd actually just spent all of that speech just being like, is he talking about Tom? I'm like, la, 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 la.
Yeah, the fucking okay. The Cruiser, he fucked up his ankle, didn't he? But they kept it in the film. So in the film, you see him, his leg break.
It's like you see Aragorn break his toe in Two Towers.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, when he kicks, you know, after Merry and Pippin have escaped the... Why is that funny?
I don't know.
After Merry and Pippin escape the orcs and crawl into Fangorn Forest. They come across... Fangorn Forest, even. They come across all the burnt orcs and there's a and they think that basically Merian and Pippin are dead, and there's a helmet on the floor and Aragorn goes and kicks it. Yeah. At that moment he breaks his toe.
Yeah, it's like that, but much, much better, because it's his broken leg, mate, not a little toe. You see his like ankle snap. But what that made me think of was how...
Wait a minute, is Henry Cavill anywhere near him, and does he pick up the waves of pain in his moustache?
I don't know. What is that film? I haven't seen a Mission Impossible film since Mission Impossible John Woo.
Nice. Was that with the gun that just pops up vertically?
Yeah,
everyone knows about the gun.
Yeah.
See, I didn't see that. I saw the first one, which I thought was boring as hell. Didn't see the second one. Third one is brilliant.
What's the third one?
Third one's J.J. Abrams directing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Was Simon Pegg in it?
No, I don't think Simon Pegg is in that one.
Jack Black.
What's his name? He's dead now. Died of a heroin overdose. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh,
Philip
yeah.
Seymour Hoffman died. He's the bad guy in that. He's
yeah,
brilliant.
That was all right, wasn't it? That was good because he had that bit on the bridge where the rocket hits him and he jumps towards the camera.
It was quite bad motion blur, bad CG motion blur.
No, I thought it was all right, wasn't it? When he smacks against the car door.
When he smacks against the car is good, but his lift towards the door was like...
I think the third one was when Cruise just got obsessed with doing his own stunts in films and stuff.
Yes, he did. And it was awesome. No, because he'd done
been doing it since the first one.
Yeah. I was going to say he had, because he did that whole, he did the climb in
the second one, which was a big thing that he
did it himself. But also for that one, he'd negotiated, that I think was the first film where he negotiated percentage of profit or percentage of gross, because he made something like 300 million from that film.
Why, what, personally?
Yeah.
Where's that going? We know where that's going, don't we? Into the big blue ivory tower of Scientology
He's
land.
He's just going to buy himself another P-51 Mustang.
The point I was going to make before I got sidetracked by the cruiser.
I think
like stuntmen are like the most underappreciated, other than editors, the most underappreciated role like in Hollywood.
It's interesting that they're still needed, because there's so many ridiculous stunts being done by CG now. Mm. But I think it's awesome that they're still needed as well.
That's a craft, like, that's a...
It is, it's so craft,
back
not,
to, like,
I mean,
classical Hollywood.
Is it not enough that you get punched out of a car, you know, is it not, while it's moving? Is it not enough that you get punched out of a car while it's moving at 40 miles an hour? Is it not enough that you get punched out of a car that's moving at 40 miles an hour and you have to fall in such a way that you hit the crash mat that's out there? Is it not enough that you get punched out of a car that's moving about 30 miles an hour that you have to hit the mat and you have to make sure that you cover your face so that the camera doesn't see that it's not actually the person you're doubling?
Yeah, no one ever knows who you are. Yeah,
yes, man. It is an underappreciated art form.
It's ridiculous. When you get these kind of actors doing their own stunts, it massively stands out. Going back to Jackie Chan, it was such a joy watching those old films.
You've got what? Like, you've got Police Story 1 to 1 million.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah,
you're rescuing me from that fucking black hole of
Police
knowledge.
Well, the one that you probably remember is where they're at the shopping centre at the end.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Police Story. There we go.
You know me too well.
No, because the stunts in that are absolutely out of this world. The way that people are somersaulting, flipping, the choreography is amazing. He does that huge slide down the pole to...
What does he do? Does he jump in a massive shopping centre?
So they're in a massive shopping centre. I can't remember how many stories up it is. This is like a whole glass breaking scene. The whole set piece is about people being kicked through shop windows and smashed with glass and thrown through display cabinets and shit like that. So the top of this is... He has to jump. There's a pole, like an ornamental pole that hangs from the very top of the shopping centre to about 2/3 of the way down the bottom. He has to jump onto it from the edge of one of the floors. He has to jump to it, catch it, slide down it. It's also rigged with electric lights as well because it's decorated. So he slides through the electric lights as they're all going and fizzing. Then when the pole runs out 2/3 of the way down, he falls through a greenhouse at the bottom, gets up and goes.
Fucking amazing. Like no wires.
No wires.
Like, you've got to nail this because you might die or lose legs. Fucking outrageous. Yeah, it was such a joy seeing him do those like incredible stunts, especially like the end credits where you see him just break stuff regularly.
But what was cool with Jackie Chan and actors doing their own stunts is you could put the camera that much closer. You didn't have the person covering their, you know, they're rolling over while covering their face expertly.
Until
they cut and the real actor gets up. So you could put the camera that much closer. But one thing that then started to happen, as CG started getting better, was you could start superimposing faces onto people.
That always works.
Which they did for Christopher Lee in the Attack of the Clones.
Blurry face mask.
It wasn't quite there, because he could do the close-ups and he could do all the sword fighting, even for his age, because he'd been in over 200 films. So he could do the sword fighting for the close-ups and stuff like that, but he can't actually walk fast enough to do all the footwork. In any of the wide shots, it's a stuntman with his face superimposed over it.
But that looked bad, though.
It didn't look great at the time. There's probably a fair bit of that going on now, and we haven't even noticed.
If it's
not like a full CG character.
Yeah, yeah. It must be all over these Marvel films then. Fuck! Shit! Okay, so the foreigner, the foreigner.
No, it's in fact, it's not about the stunts. It just feels like it's got a solid story with solid motives.
Okay.
Great acting.
But maybe that's what you get when it isn't about the stunts. Like, yeah. The film has to rely on something else, doesn't it? Mate, Jackie Chan is 64 years old. Mate, it's in so many films.
It's the first film I ever saw, because I was introduced to Jackie Chan in Africa, of all places.
What?
I was introduced to Jackie Chan in Africa because a friend of mine had a recording of Project A2. It was VHS. It was all in Cantonese. No subtitles.
Is Project A2 the name of a film?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it? I'm sure it's better in Cantonese.
All right, okay.
And still to this day, I don't know what the plot of that movie is. I've no idea what happens or what's supposed to be happening. All it is like people go to places, they kick the shit out of each other in the 20s, I think it's set. And it's got one of Jackie Chan's amazing songs at the end, which I thought I could sing up until recently.
Well, really? Well, like,
no, because I knew, because I know roughly how it goes.
Oh, right. You know,
but
the
then Miss showed me this. Then Miss showed me a video of Ken Lee. Have you seen this?
What?
It's this woman, like some Turkish woman, on like pop idol. They're called a pop idol, and she sings a song. They go, "What song are you going to sing?" And she goes, "Ken Lee." And she goes, "Ken Lee, I've never seen it, and now I've just realised that that's exactly how I sing the Jackie Chan songs.
Oh my god!
So I can't do it.
That is, now that broadcasting that is racist.
What?
Do you remember? He's made about 170 odd films.
Fuck.
Do you remember him as the Subaru driver in Cannonball Run?
No.
Do you not? Mate, I do. Project A, yeah.
Project A 2.
Part 2, 1987.
Okay.
Jackie Chan played Sergeant Dragon May.
His name is Sergeant Dragon.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. I don't know.
Because one of the actors, that's it, he's attacked. Some of the bad guys that chase him, it's an axe-wielding gang.
Yeah.
And one of the axes twats on the cameras and you see the cameraman crap his eye.
Oh, really?
Because the axe has hit the front of the camera and the camera's been forced back into his face.
Really?
His little hand. I don't know if it's a setup, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, so Rumble in the Bronx was like 1995.
That was the first step over to America, but it was still dubbed, which was bizarre. It's dubbed in... Everyone's speaking English, but it's dubbed in English.
That's got kind of like Sergio Leone, like Spaghetti Western feel, where they're all filmed in Italy, pretending to be whatever, America, Nevada, and or the Midwest. And yet they're still speaking in Italian. And even Eastwood has to dub his own lines, because everything's in it, like ADR. Then there was Rush Hour in 1998.
Yep. Which is
just listing Jackie Chan.
But what was wicked about that is the effort he'd gone to. He still didn't speak English, but he was learning it basically phonetically. Like,
okay.
So at this point, you say this.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. So like literally line by line.
If you go back, like looking at somebody like, is it Marion Cotillard?
Yes.
So she's been in English-speaking films for absolutely ages. I mean, we were watching Big Fish the other day, which I kind of fell in love with her in that.
Was she in Big Fish?
Yeah, she's the pregnant wife. But she was just this really... I'd never seen her in anything else before, but she was just this really sweet character. She doesn't... I was about to say, she still can't string a sentence together, like, ooh, English is the most important language. But you know, she still doesn't speak English fluently.
Yeah, okay.
You can just be, okay, right, so I say this at this point, and it means this. Okay, cool. And you know, you can wing your way through it, clearly. And that's what Jackie Chan's obviously doing in Rush Hour.
Wow. I didn't even notice that in Rush Hour.
No, you don't. But you see it in the but you see it in the outtakes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Were there any outtakes to The Foreigner, mate?
No.
I miss our classic Jackie Chan films. The Foreigner.
It's on Netflix. You'll have seen a trailer for it.
Yeah.
You'll have thought that looks awful, and you'd have gone on to watching whatever else you were going to fucking watch. But give it a go. You will be surprised.
Okay, I'm going to check that out then. Genuinely, I'm going to check it out. And I'm going to come armed to our next episode with my thoughts on The Foreigner, mate. What else has been happening? I'll tell you that one question. Yes, it was.
Jesus.
That's a good
Tristan, just talk about yourself for 40 minutes. Oh, yeah, whatever. Okay, let's go.
What else has been happening in your life, mate? Tristan.
No, I'm just thinking.
Tristan.
Where am I? Anything? What year?
Who's the president? Anything happened to you? Anything secretive?
Well, I'll tell you what I didn't do.
What? I'll wait my turn then, shall I?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I didn't go to secret cinema. Chris,
did you not?
Chris, please, please tell me all about Secret Cinema Blade Runner, because I know you were dying to go.
I would love to tell you all about it, mate. All right, so Secret Cinema is this thing that, is it just in London? It's in cities around the world, but in Britain, it's probably just in London at the moment. And it will branch out across to other cities.
How long has it been going for? It had a cult following for quite a while.
I reckon since at least 2010 or something like that. I first heard about it around then. The event was announced and it wasn't, they withheld the title, right? So what you get is like an email or something on Facebook that says the next Secret Cinema event is coming up. And there'll be some cryptic clues in that email that kind of hint at what the film is going to be. But you're never told what it is. So you'd pay your money and then you'd be given a set of instructions, like directions to the event, let's say like a week before. You'd get given like a sort of loose dress code as well, and then some other cryptic stuff, like something to use as currency. I don't know, like some old photographs, or it could be something else. So the original ones, you turned up and you had no idea what the film was. So I remember seeing Carol Reed's The Third Man, starring Orson Welles, which is that famous film noir set in Austria, and it was held in like an abandoned warehouse in Farringdon in central London. The dress code was basically like 1940s-ish because it's set during the Second World War, so it's kind of drill V's or raincoat, like Max or whatever, and then like basic garb.
Were you given was it like an Easter egg hunt? Were you given clues of like how to get to the location, but you had to figure it out? Or were you told?
Yeah, kind of. You kind of get told where to meet, and then the next step after that. So you just like turn, back in the day, you turn up and it'd just be like a queue of people all dressed weird down some dark alley in Farringdon in London at night in winter. Then you come around the corner and you see like loads of people. And then there'd be actors playing like guards and shit like that. And then you go in and they've decorated the whole like 5-story warehouse with shit like casinos, because in the film they visit a casino. There's bars all themed in like 1940s shit. And then you just do that for like a couple of hours. And around you, amongst all of the punters like paying for this, all dressed up, would be like actors who kind of act shit scenes from the film out. Or it's loosely based on stuff that happens in the film. So it becomes like an experiential event where these experiences happen around you, and you choose whether you get involved with it or you just fuck it off and carry on drinking at the bar, right?
I got wind of it. You told me about it, I think, just before you said, oh, I've bought you tickets to this screening. You come with me, check it out. So yeah. You and I went to a screening of The Empire Strikes Back, didn't we?
Yes.
This is where things had changed and they actually started telling you what the film was before.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they realised that to make more money, it's really difficult to promote something at scale if you don't tell anyone what it's worth paying money for.
Yeah, but it started off with a cult following, which is really, really cool. So then we went to Empire Strikes Back, and this was my first experience of it. And the kind of the interactive part of it, it almost sounds like audience participation. It sounds cringy, and it's not like that. We were walking around like a market in Tatooine, and we got grabbed by somebody who was turned out to be a secret agent. We got grabbed and pulled with a bunch of other people into like a hovel, and then got given a mission, we had to go out and find some people and try and get off world, and it was really cool. But as the evening was going on, we saw another bunch of people getting accosted by that agent, being pulled into the hovel, and because we could see through the window in the house. And then at that moment, stormtroopers burst in and arrested them all. And I thought, this is amazing, because everybody gets a slightly different experience.
Yeah, you do. That's quite good. It was around about that point that I got lost in that world, didn't I, mate? And I got in too deep. I think you found me staring at a projection of the Twin Suns.
That was amazing.
I think I was crying.
So one wall in this warehouse, which had been filled with sand, like the whole floor had been covered in sand. They'd built Tatooine-style dwellings. One whole wall of it was a high-res projection of the setting Twin Suns of Tatooine. It was incredible. Yeah. We both, I think we held hands and stared at it.
We definitely held hands and... I don't know, after that it was difficult, wasn't it? We had to take our tops off and have a cuddle. The joy of it is, like you said, it's very difficult to recreate the same experience.
One of the interesting things about this is, as you start the experience, you have your phone sealed in a bag.
Yeah.
The whole idea is that you can't make phone calls, you can't take pictures, And
didn't you try and smuggle yours in?
It really irritated me. It really irritated me to begin with, but it wasn't until later when I was leaving and I took a photograph in Mos Eisley Cantina, and the barman jumped over the bar and chased me out.
Oh yeah!
Security caught me,
yeah.
And they made me delete all my pictures.
Yeah, they're fucking militant.
Which was fine because I had them already backed up to Dropbox and to Google.
But still,
it wasn't until after that I realized, oh shit, the whole point of this. It's not only the fact they don't want people to see what's going on and keep an air of mystery about it, but also if you're not dicking around with your phone, taking pictures and stuff like that, you're actually 100% there.
How ironic.
And I didn't appreciate that at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they started announcing the names. So, you know, basically you now form a queue to join these things, like online. They sell out super fast and the ticket prices are through the roof. And they changed it to tier it to make more money. Now there's kind of different tiers of ticket prices. So it's fucking expensive. Like, it starts at about 47 quid and you can pay up to about 80 quid for a ticket. So I went to Blade Runner, didn't I, mate? Have you seen the film Blade Runner, Justin?
You'll have heard some of these rants. If you've not, go back to the first couple of episodes and hear Chris's disdain at the fact he has to sit through Blade Runner, a film which he loathes, one more time.
Oh, it's long, mate. It's a long film.
But it was your brother that bought your tickets, right?
Fucking you up.
Your brother bought your tickets as a
yeah. So a group of us went. One of the party, Dell, had been, who's a friend of the podcast. he said he hasn't heard of the podcast and he didn't know. He's never heard of us. I was like, you fucking best mate's my brother. He didn't cut that shit. So one of our party, Dell, he'd been the night before, and he totally like. His girlfriend's mate at work had said, does anyone want to come? So he got roped into going. He totally was not up for that. He got roped into doing it. And he'd just come back from it. And he had to get his costume on and go, fucking go again. But he still says, like, it was a unique experience. And he still says, well, I didn't do that. That didn't happen before. And like, oh, wow, this is quite interesting. So there's so much going on. It can't fail to feel unique at times.
I have to ask you a question. With our Empire screening, I mean, you know, there was a part where we were in a desert for all intents and purposes. If you didn't look up, like, you wouldn't have known.
I don't remember. We must have looked up.
Oh, of course.
But I don't remember it having, like, scaffolding and rigging and
stuff. The commitment to the... I mean, there was a full-size X-Wing flew in from the ceiling and landed. I mean, we're talking about the level of commitment to building the staging and stuff like that is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, was there rain falling from the ceiling?
Yeah, man. There was. There was. It was class. All right, so this event... I thought this event was class. I thought it was really, really good. It was good fun.
Were you wearing a trench coat? What were you? You'd have been a scavenger if you were...
Yeah, so I just paid the... We paid the basic rates, right? Which buys you the best entertainment.
Okay.
Because basically all you're paying for the expensive tickets is like to pretend that you're Deckard or a cop role. You get like a cop role. So your fancy dress costume is like a fucking trench coat and a hat. I like the film, and you get access to like the top bars, which are fancy and shit like that. But when you're at these events, there is a central kind of golden thread, like a narrative that plays out, whether you're watching it or listening or not. Shit happens before the film, so it's like experiential stuff for a couple of hours or however long you get in there. So like the earlier you get there, the longer that period lasts, right? And then the film happens after that. So you spend the majority of the evening like just hanging out in that film world. I do fucking love it, to be fair. So in this circumstance, it was for Blade Runner. I was like, I really can't be fucked to watch Blade Runner again. For obvious reasons, I'm just going to enjoy just being in that experience and see what kind of levels of detail they get to. Because there's no denying that when Ridley Scott shot that film... It was mind-blowing. That film is rich in details. When Ridley Scott shot Blade Runner, his attention to detail really lasts. So the lasting effect is that tangible world that he filmed with the rain and like the noodle bars and the steam coming off them and the umbrellas and the neon and the floating cars and the steam and the wet brickwork and shit like that. Very tangible real world. So I looked forward to seeing that, and then I got there and it was great. You know, the center of this area was like a kind of grid platform, And then you're walking through and then the fucking heavens open and you just get absolutely pissed on. Like that. And you're in raincoats and you're told to bring like umbrellas and stuff like that. But as soon as you walk in, inevitably someone grabs you and says something to you and starts one of the many plot lines that litter the event. So again, like, you just choose like how much you want to give a fuck about that. And the narrative builds and builds and builds. As you meander around buying like food and sitting eating noodles, which we did, I was like, I want some noodles. If I go to a Blade Runner thing, I want to eat fucking noodles. And I want to go to a bar. Like, which is what there was one of these characters jumped out of nowhere and I was like, who are you? And they're like, okay guys, I've got something to tell you. And they give you some spiel and they say like, give me some money, and the money is bottle caps. So you give them some bottle caps that you're told to bring and they go, right, come with me. And they took us round this corner, which looked just like a kind of like a dead end, like a dark thing like that, through a small little curtain, and we appeared in this kind of like fucking futuristic bar, like a club with dancers like in the middle and like music like bang, like techno music. We're like, what the fuck is this? Would never have known to go there, but a character jumped out of nowhere and said to us both, follow me. And then we did, and then for that point we're like, fuck it, let's go to a drink. That is gold. That's what I love about these secret cinema events, that for any sort of like cinema lover like you and I, and we are cinema lovers, for any true fan of film, there's such a joy to be immersed in that kind of world. So much so that I didn't actually mind watching Blade Runner again. Does that shock you?
Well, no, it doesn't shock me. I can imagine like how, from our experience with Empire, how fucking amazing that was. The only thing that ruined it for me, because Empire's, it's my favourite film of all time. The whole time I was walking around our experience going like, well, Tatooine's a New Hope and this is a New Hope. And I had that on the fucking washing machine of my own mind going like, this doesn't make any sense. This is ridiculous. It's to the point that it actually got in the way a little bit. And then it turns out our whole experience was we walked through all of A New Hope and then we stepped into the first scene of Empire where we sat down in the snow and watched the film, and at that moment you go, ah, God, I wish I hadn't been such a dick. I'd have enjoyed it even more. So that made like a narrative arc for us.
Yeah.
You know, we'd walk through the first, because they, with the trilogy, you know, you're not going to get to do all three, and they pick the middle one, so that's a bit weird.
Yeah.
My question is this. It seems more appropriate with that in mind that you'd have walked through Blade Runner and then gone into Blade Runner 2049 to watch the screening of that.
No. This was just like a summary of what Blade Runner meant to the organizers of this film. It's a summary of the things that they've tried to summarize, the key themes of Blade Runner, right? Which is basically noodles, rain, neon, and then tits. So I was thinking, oh, Christ, I can't...
A masterpiece of Ridley Scott's.
It was, yeah.
Described in about six words.
Like I've said before, Blade Runner is a film that is, for me, hugely overwatched, both at home originally and then at the cinema for all of the various re-releases, every one of them. And every time I saw the film recently, I enjoyed it as a kid. Every time I watched the re-releases at the cinema, it just like left me so flat and it just did nothing for me. But there was something about this event that kind of reframed the film. When you sat down after all of that shit going on before you, which was probably a good maybe like 2 to 3 hours worth of being part of ostensibly that world, then it kind of fucking just, I don't know, it just, the film starts and you're like, I am so into this. It was like seeing it through the eyes of my father, who watched it at the cinema back in the early 80s and whose mind was blown by it because there was nothing like that going on at the time. And what I appreciated through like this new lens was Ridley Scott's just attention to detail and the fact that it's like he is aware of every science fiction cliche and he does his best to avoid it and subvert them. The look and the feel of it, he dwells on the smallest detail for like so long that you can't help but feel like, okay, he's just taken a camera out and just filmed like just down a random street. He's just gone outside and filmed this place exists, and the flying things telling people to go off world and shit like that, he just opened a window and filmed it. So it gave me that kind of like it helped me understand Blade Runner the way it was supposed to be understood in the first place, which is by people that have never seen it before at the cinema for the first time. But I don't think it was the event alone that did that. I think what did that was watching Blade Runner 2049, because that was like, I mean, what was your experience of seeing that? Like, because for me, it was like, wow, this is loud and this is different and it's like, and it looks incredible. And all they're all the things that people associate with Blade Runner, the first one, when that was first released.
This was a weird one for me because I forced myself to sit down and watch 2049, despite the fact that I don't like Blade Runner. There's nothing in it for me at all, apart from the fact that it looks fantastic. I think the film, I think the film was too smart for me when I watched it. Like, it's a detective that doesn't really do any detecting. Like, nothing really...
The original?
Yeah, nothing really happens in it.
Yeah.
If you're not thinking in a cerebral kind of way.
Well...
Like, I'm not a fan of Blade Runner, but I sat down, I was curious, because I kind of liked Arrival. There's bits of that film that I really appreciate, bits of it that I don't. I thought, okay,
the same director, Denis Villeneuve. Yeah.
So I sat down, and I love 2049. I think it's a masterpiece. I really do. It's because I didn't connect to Deckard at all, or Sean Young, or any of the, or Roy, or any of the characters in the original.
Bad guys whatsoever. Fucking Roy, mate.
I just your eyes, even though that's not him. I don't connect to anybody in that movie at all. That movie just happens in front of my eyes, and that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas this, Harrison Ford can't remember his name. I can't remember his name either. Brian Gosnell was amazing to watch.
That's not a thing.
That's his thing. It's Ryan Gosnell. No, I thought. He's very good at looking like he's thinking before he's about to speak. Like all the characters he plays, none of the characters he plays are ever like fucking. They never just spew out a sentence. They always look like they never speak unless it's considered or unless they have to speak. So I enjoyed his performance. I thought the story was brilliant as well. It made sense. But also returning to this familiar world as well and getting to see other elements of it that you'd not seen before, which was interesting.
That's not true. You hated the first one.
Yeah, I don't. I don't like the first one at all. I wish there was only one Blade Runner, and it was Blade Runner 2049.
But anyway, the point.
Oh, who else was good? Great performance from Jared Leto.
Oh yeah,
as well. When it had the whole thing about being, you know, civilization being built on the backs of slaves.
Yeah.
I'd watched all the short films that had led up to it as well. The three shorts that came out that were very good.
Yeah, pioneered by the Animatrix.
So I enjoyed that film an awful lot.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
And as did I. So anyway, the reason why I say that I think that was more influential in me enjoying Blade Runner again than spending 3.5 hours pretending to be in Blade Runner was that it embodied the same things that Blade Runner embodied at the time, which was big visuals, memorable sound design, and there's two composers on it, Zimmer and is it Benjamin Wolfitch who composes like horror stuff. He did the It remake.
Is it Zimmer, really? I thought Zimmer didn't work with Ridley Scott until Black Rain.
No. I'm talking about 2049. So it's part Hans Zimmer, isn't it? And there's kind of like motor engine sounds like in the opening scenes, like...
That's the exact noise that Sebulba's pod racer makes from Phantom Menace.
Blade Runner 2049... goes big on visuals and it goes big on sound, right?
It also goes big on plot. The plot's brilliant.
Yeah. So it's a compelling enough plot, right? Because it's a fucking long film. Jesus Christ, it is a long film. After seeing that, I was like, maybe this is what it was like seeing the original for the first time back in the 80s. You know, even if I'm not too concerned about the plot and even if I feel that it drags now and again, those visuals, like that aesthetic... That design, you know, the architecture, the look and the feel of the character, what the characters wear and how they and the streets and that kind of stuff. I understand now why that resonated so much and why that would plaster over the cracks of potentially a weaker storyline. So watching Blade Runner, the original, then at this Secret Cinema event, I had that. I was focusing. I was kind of like enamored by that attention to detail, by the aesthetics again. And that is such a joy because Scott goes so fucking balls deep on that stuff. It's everywhere. And he doubles down on it. But the structure of Blade Runner is so fucking weird. For a film noir, neo-noir, it's got such a long meandering middle act. There's like 20 minutes at the start, 20 minutes at the end where he gets chased by Rutger Hauer's speed trunks. And then, like, the majority of the film basically doing not much at all. It's so fucking weird, so flat. But I was loving it because my attention wasn't on the fact that the preceding scene and the scene before that included absolutely nothing of any importance to the narrative at all. I was just like, this is a new scene, and wow, look at the light coming through those windows, and look at the architecture of that thing through the window in the distance. And that's the point of Blade Runner.
Well, Scott, you know, was accused early in his career of spending more time dealing with sets than dealing with actors. Yeah. That was his thing.
Cool. So it was a joy to watch Blade Runner and not be fucking bored stiff by it for the first time in about 20 years, mate.
Well, the story had a happy ending. So if you could live in any fictional world,
yes,
like where would that be?
Any fictional world in any film that I've seen.
In any film, yeah.
Or even films I haven't seen. Oh, that's a tough one. But, shit. I still don't know. What about you?
Fuck, you've had 10 minutes since I asked the question. I went out and had a piss and came back. Didn't piss for 10 minutes. Seriously, I think I'd probably live somewhere in Star Wars.
You tell me which fantasy world I would be at home in. I'll tell you you'd be at home in.
Okay. I would make you the person that loads and hands all the weapons to Snake Plissken.
What?
That would be your only job would be to follow Snake Plissken around and hand him his guns.
What the fuck? I thought he only has one gun.
He's got just that long. It's just that massive Uzi with the scope on the top of it.
Right.
You'd polish his scope.
I would make you dress like one of Ming the Merciless's sexy handmaidens from the planet Mongo. Remember with that giant shiny bumhole creature that Timothy Dalton puts his hand into? I would love for both of us to do this podcast from Mongo.
I haven't seen Flash Gordon in years, but for the last month I've been thinking about it loads. Because thinking about the dude who goes, I have nothing to offer you this year except my loyalty, and he goes, well, throw yourself onto your sword.
Yes,
Ming the Merciless.
That was Max von Sydow.
It is, yeah.
Unbelievable. Timothy Dalton puts his hand into a giant wet bumhole, doesn't he? You've got Brian Blessed with like a giant metal codpiece with his tits out flying through the sky with like 1,000 actual extras with a bazooka. Yeah, fuck me. That film is like scarred on some of the back of my retinas. Christ, remember that like interrogation thing, like with a needle and shit?
No, I remember.
That's because that happens in Star Wars. Yeah. Fuck's sake.
I remember.
Same thing.
I remember Dale Arden, the girl that's with Flash for some reason, doing cartwheels while these weird spring-like lasers miss her. It's bizarre, that film. Mm. It really is. But speaking of that, it's got the Queen soundtrack, hasn't it? Flash.
It does, yeah.
And the trailer dropped this week for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes.
And it looks good.
Does it?
Yeah.
I watched it on mute, bored. I didn't.
That was the stupidest. Why would you watch a film about musicians on mute on the trailer?
It was like,
I'm going to make you watch it now. We have to stop and watch the trailer.
Oh, no, I've seen it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I watched it, but it was like 1 a.m. and, I was like.
Dexter Fletcher, mate. Dexter Fletcher.
What? Did he direct it?
Yes.
What? Dexter Fletcher, one of the greatest living actors. What's the next Secret Cinema?
I don't know.
I just bought tickets to it. Actually just bought tickets to it.
Is it Blade Runner?
No, the next one.
What is it, Blade Runner?
You and Mish need to go.
What is it?
Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Have you really?
Yes.
Are you going to go?
Oh. Yes, because it's going to be class.
That would be weird.
No, it'd be incredible, mate.
Why will it be incredible?
Verona Beach.
It's just basically
Masquerade Ball.
It's going to be how we dressed when we were 14 after seeing the film where we went around in suits with the big open collars.
Yes, it
is. It's just going to be weird.
Yeah, I'm up for that. I've already bought tickets, mate.
I'm going to post a picture on the website.
Mate,
that we don't have.
We need to go. Em and I are going, come on, mate. Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. It's a fucking masterpiece.
Genuinely is.
You showed it to me, remember?
I'm only pausing because I'm just thinking, like, which I want to say. It's possibly the greatest adaptation of Shakespeare that's ever been put onto celluloid. And I'm saying that purely because I know that some of my tutors at drama school are now rolling in their graves because they fucking hated it.
Did they?
They hated that it was accessible and it was no longer just for academics.
Yeah. But, it, you know, all the other ones and it was, were and it was shit, though, weren't they?
And it was responsible for more people seeing Romeo and Juliet than anything that had ever been done before.
Than the craft itself, which should act like a fucking beacon, but it doesn't. Yeah.
It's back when Leonardo DiCaprio was just a pretty boy as well, not a renowned actor.
Do you know what?
Crying.
It's because of DiCaprio that I've let loose so badly. And I'm comfortable with that.
You can follow us on Twitter at BoxFreshFilms.
At BoxFreshFilms. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Oh, don't forget to follow us on Twitter. It's not just Twitter, though, is it, mate?
It's not just Twitter, though. We've got Instagram as well.
Well, it's Instagram, which has been neglected.
It's been very neglected.
Facebook, which has been neglected. And there's, what's it called?
What's that other one? The thing is, who's in charge of all the social media stuff?
We haven't.
I mean, it's basically you, isn't it? You're meant to be in charge of the social media stuff.
No.
But I've taken control a little bit more of the Twitter stuff.
Who are you, mate?
Who, me?
Yeah, where's Tristan? What have you done
I'm
with
him?
I'm
that fucking dude this morning that won the lottery and ain't got any fucking teeth, aren't I?
Is that news, is it?
Yeah, it's a dude. He's won over $1 million. And the first thing everyone's looking at is, the first thing you're going to do is fix your teeth. He's like, no, he's got one fucking tooth hanging down like a stalactite.
Well, I don't understand. What have you done with him? I want him back.
Okay, why? What's up?
I miss him.
Oh.
He was you all along. If anyone else would like to share their experiences of Secret Cinema Blade Runner, don't publish it all over Facebook like what we're about to do when this is released. Just DM us, direct mail us, and let's have a little chat about it. Let's take it offline. Message me, text me. I'll text you back. I'll put my phone number on our profile. You can call me. Just call me the details. I'd love to chat about it with you. If you like our podcast, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share it. More than that, mate. Tristan, have you written us a review yet under a pseudonym?
Yeah, of course I have.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so if you want to write us a review under a pseudonym, then please do that. Make sure it's a five-star
crashing
one.
To its fucking knees. Is that what you want?
Is it?